This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm Gene Demby, and you are listening to Code Switch from NPR. So y'all know, we love books at Code Switch. You know, they help us explore the world and sharpen our ideas and understand ourselves. That might be especially true for the books we read when we're really young. I remember when I was 9 and I had to read The Lion, The Witch, and the Wardrobe, the book that is a giant propaganda piece for Turkish Delights. Oh, and it's also about, you know, Christianity, whatever. Anyway, today we're talking to an author who has thought really hard about the image of the world they want to present to young people. Their name is Kaysen Callender. Today, Kaysen is the author of a whole bunch of middle school and YA books. In fact, we're actually talking to Kaysen as part of a collaboration between NPR and the Library of Congress National Book Festival. But before Kaysen was a famous book author, there were a kid in St. Thomas in the Caribbean writing fan fiction.
It used to be primarily for Harry Potter, which is a really difficult subject for me.
Difficult because Kaysen is trans and non-binary. And as y'all probably know, J.K. Rowling has said some janky stuff about people who are trans and non-binary, and she's been doing it for years. It's a whole thing. But Kaysen says back in the day, the Harry Potter books were a big deal for them because they
taught so much of our generation to have even any empathy, period, for people who are different.
I mean, I would disagree that they do that for the house elves. I mean, like, everyone's gonna, you know. Anyway, that's what Kaysen is hoping to do, trying to get people to have empathy for people who are different. Their books all feature Black LGBTQ protagonists learning how to love themselves. And that's something we all need to do. And those characters are doing all kinds of growing up along the way. Their latest YA book, Felix Ever After, is a high school romantic dramedy that centers a Black trans boy named Felix. And y'all, there's so much drama in this book. I'm reading and like, wow, this is a lot. It's given like free form. You know what I mean? There's catfishing, luxury, penthouse apartments, a bully who makes Cruella DeVille look like a softie. But something happens with that bully that I'm not going to spoil for y'all. But, you know, teenage drama. So I had to ask, was your high school life this dramatic?
Oh, definitely not. Not
I remember as I was reading it, I was like, oh, this is like a free form show. Like
yeah.
When there's sort of this whole dead naming and really, you know, traumatic moment. I'm like, oh, these characters are supervillains. Like, I was wondering if you were perhaps pulling from your own experience.
No, I mean, what is actually really sad about that is that I actually have gotten some trans people who've reached out to say that someone did something similar, which is horrific. But in terms of, like, besides that, just kind of like the general, like, drama and what a lot of people like to say, like, messiness of it all is, you know, purely entertainment. That's not something I experienced when I was young.
You weren't a messy teenager.
I was too quiet and shy. I think I also write, what's the word? What I kind of like wish my life had been. So I really wish, you know, I only even understood my own gender identity when I was like 25. So Felix is kind of like wish fulfillment. Like, I really wish I had discovered my gender identity when I was his age and I was able to like celebrate myself and have like all these amazing, like, glamorous friends in New York. You know, that was more of like a wish fulfillment fantasy, which is what I think also makes it a little more entertaining.
I was wondering about that because one of the things as I was reading was so Felix is originally from Bed-Stuy, moved to Harlem. Mm-hmm. But it's like moving around in this way that is like unfettered, like, for a teenager. And granted, like, I know some teenagers who grew up in New York and some of them were kind of feral, but like just the kind of spaces that Felix can move in, these really rich spaces, right, which are so different from the way he grew up, seems like it could only happen if he were like in, you know, an elite private school, you know. I know that was your experience, right? I mean, that you went to a private school. You were nowhere near where he was in terms of understanding your identity. But did you have that kind of, like, just physical agency in other ways? Like, could you just kind of come and go as you wanted?
Not at all. Not at all. I was super isolated. Like on St. Thomas, my biggest gripe was like, I'm surrounded by water, so I can't even run away if I wanted to. I felt so like claustrophobic, so isolated. So, again, like this was really, I think that's what I love a lot about YA in particular also, is that there's some things that are, of course, like realistic. But for me, a lot of the entertainment is in the kind of like wish fulfillment and just kind of like writing about what I wish my life had been like as a teenager. And then getting to watch teenagers today respond with, I wish my life was like that also, in a kind of like a almost freeing way, because for Felix, it was kind of like a just do it, just do what, there was like a theme of like, just do what it is that you want, like be free. And kind of like hoping that that does resonate with younger readers. But then also having moments where it's like, there are teenagers that say, this is my life right now, and kind of being amazed by that. And watching, teenagers will get into like fights with adults over it sometimes. I've tried to like stay away from it, but just be like, well, no, I actually do this. You're trying to say that this isn't realistic, but this is my life right now, and trying to, that's amazing to me.
So you have these online communities of YA readers that are having some really intense discussions about, you know, representation in fiction and also about morality, right? And I'm curious how you interact with the responses to your work when it comes to these questions around representation of trans and queer youth, especially when so much of this is about your personal story, right? You said you're bringing a lot of your own ideas and traumas, frankly, to this. I wonder how you metabolize those discussions.
Oh, this is a very complicated question because... Yeah, a lot of these conversations are so necessary. A lot of those conversations are what started We Need Diverse Books, for example, and a lot of different kind of like actionable movements that are creating real change. And I think because of all of that, that's when you started to see books like Children of Blood and Bone, all these like groundbreaking books that were just, and The Hate U Give, that were just not given the space and chance to succeed before, the platform to succeed before. So all those conversations are necessary to even have our stories seen and heard. They're necessary for the protection of children. So if we're having conversations about what is potentially harmful in representation, what stereotypes have always continued, we need to be mindful of what we can do to end those stereotypes and those harmful representations so that children can actually be seen for the first time in a healthy way. So all of that is necessary and very groundbreaking. I think that on the other hand, it can become a bit like of a life of its own, where if you're, and it, I think it's also very individual, it depends on the individual, but for me personally, I felt like I was starting to get sucked into that so much, into those conversations so much, that it was taking away from my own kind of like sense of joy and even like energy and time from writing itself. So while I think that those conversations are necessary and they need to continue, personally for me, I've had to take a major step back from online engagement, period, and including these conversations, so that I can focus on myself and my own health and my own what makes me happy.
And do you feel that part of that is because you're such a like a visible trans author, right, in the YA space, that there is much more riding on your point of view and what you're putting out in the world in your books?
I don't think so, and I hope not. I think that there are a lot more trans writers and non-binary writers who have been having their books published recently, and I don't want to be the only one ever. I'm tired of being the only one. Sure. So it's been great to see that there are more authors. I don't want to have that pressure on me for only my voice, because as many trans people as there are trans perspectives. So my experience in Felix Ever After or in any of my other books that I have written about a trans protagonist is going to be my experience, and that might not necessarily resonate with another person who is trans or non-binary, and I don't want that to be the expectation either.
You say that you've had to step away from those spaces, you know, just for your well-being and because, you know, it was like not productive. What was your relationship to those spaces like before people knew who you were as a writer? Because you said you were writing fan fiction, so you were in, obviously, online spaces writing fiction. But how did that sort of your increasing prominence change your relationship to these spaces?
Well, first, the increasing prominence meant more followers, which mm-hmm. meant more eyes, which meant little space to make mistakes. And I think that that, for me, is the biggest issue that I personally have had with online spaces recently for the community, is that every human will make a mistake, but it becomes more of a issue of you're not allowed to make mistakes, and that kind of almost takes away the humanity of authors and of people who have larger followers, where you're not even given a chance to really take accountability. I think that that's where the focus should lie. I think that there's more of a focus on kind of like shaming and the entertainment of picking apart other people and of saying like you made a mistake and we refuse to forgive you, and feeling like we're empowered by the refusal of forgiveness, versus actually taking all of that energy and putting it into accountability. And accountability and shame are different, where with accountability, when someone makes a mistake, the focus on correcting that mistake and apologizing and fixing it so that we can move on together as a community, I feel is more important than saying you made a mistake and you're not allowed to even attempt to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything about those spaces that you miss?
I miss being able to interact in a fun way with other writers, with other readers, just like in a kind of like lighthearted banter, what we're talking about with like our favorite movies and TV and that sort of thing. But yeah, even I remember talking like lightheartedly about Avatar: The Last Airbender and Avatar.
Oh, my favorite show.
Your favorite show is one of my favorites too. And loving Katara and Zuko. I'm a Zatara fan. I'm like Zuko and Katara all the way. And then that kind of like spinning into people literally being angry at me because they said Zuko is a symbol of colonialism and you are supporting colonialism. And just wanting, and you know, then that sparking a conversation of redemption arcs and whether people are allowed to be redeemed. And I just wanted to talk about Avatar: The Last Airbender. That's all I wanted. So, yeah.
So, you know, a lot of conversations about marginalized characters in fiction, right, are sort of just about their presence in the fiction, the importance of them being represented. But obviously in your book, that's not, like, you're starting from a position in which that's a given, right? They're going to be there, and there's going to be a continuum of characters and personalities. So what are some of the ideas about these characters and the situations they find themselves in that are the most fun for you and the most intriguing to you to write about?
Right. Well, you know, I think that it's been like a multi-stage process. First, I usually write a book like there actually kind of was a point where I felt like I was the only one, even though I wasn't there. I'm sure there were other authors. It's kind of like these books are all in a conversation with each other. So King and the Dragonflies, for example, I felt needed to kind of spark a conversation about what it means to be intersectional, have intersectional identities of Black and queer for the middle grade space, because I had never quite seen that for a cis male protagonist. Hurricane Child did something similar for a cis girl who's Black and queer as well. So I felt like I had to even just start the conversation and kind of like explain things for the audience in general, because it might not necessarily have been seen on such a wide, broad scope. And now that I've done that, and Felix Ever After was similar, one of the first Black queer demi-boy trans protagonists in YA, I felt like I had to write, kind of like create the pavement for myself to say, okay, here's the foundation. Here is what it means to be trans for me. Here's what it means to be queer for me. Here are all these different conversations. Mm-hmm. And now I get to write. I felt like I had to put that foundation in. And now I get to write books. I get to write books where it's more about these teenagers and these kids who have these identities and get to just be. It doesn't have to be about their identity. And identity can come and play a part, of course, in the same way that being Black and queer and trans plays a role in my everyday life in terms of like how people react to me, but it isn't my entire existence. And I can find joy through my identities, but I also find joy through other aspects, and I get to just kind of like explore more, I think.
Do you feel pressure to have your characters be good? I mean, Felix Ever After, for example, you know, is kind of self-centered. Catfish is somebody at some point. Like, you know, like, do you, like, Felix is just, he is just a teenager, right?
Yeah.
Like, just a being a teenager. But do you feel any added pressure because Felix is, historically speaking, a very unique and specific character?
Yeah. You know, I did not until I saw reactions to Felix that were very, exactly as you said, you know, he is a self-centered character, but it was always from the perspective of that's like a negative thing. He is like too annoying. He's too this, he's too that. And that again reminded me of how I've always been treated my entire life as a Black queer trans person. It's always, we just don't get that space to just be. I was thinking a lot about Simon versus the Homo sapiens agenda in response. Similarly, Simon made a lot of mistakes. He was manipulative. He treated his friends not so great, but he is one of the most beloved characters, but he's also white. So that really just made me think also about, you know, the craft of writing. You're actually, you're not supposed to, but one of the common aspects of writing is that you actually have characters that make a lot of mistakes, are not quote unquote great, don't have the best personalities, because they actually have to learn, like they have to grow. That's the point. Felix made all these mistakes and he had to learn and grow to become who he is by the end of the book. But we're not, as a Black person, queer, trans, he wasn't given that space to actually be able to grow because we're just not given that space as we should be. So it was interesting for me to see that parallel between, like, in within writing, we're not given that space. Characters aren't given that space. In the real world, we're not given that space. Again, I was given detention. I was the only Black kid given detention in my classroom. You know, so it's kind of like all these different parallels that I kept seeing and experiencing. And that was actually the spark to my next book, where it's called Larkin Kasim, Star Revolution, my next YA. It's actually about a Black queer non-binary kid, Lark, who is a people pleaser because they really want to escape that that unfairness, that judgment about who they're allowed to be because of all of their marginalizations. And they're very aware of the fact that they're not going to be given the same chance as white cis straight people, but they are they will, by the end of the book, will need to heal their desire to like people please and to just make everyone around them happy because they don't want to deal with the same level of anger and judgment that Felix, for example, had to deal with.
Once again, that was Kaysen Callender, the author of many, many middle grade and YA novels, including Felix Ever After, which we were just talking about, and the middle grade novels King and the Dragonflies and Hurricane Child. Our conversation was part of NPR's collaboration with the Library of Congress National Book Festival. For information and more author interviews, visit loc.gov/bookfest. And y'all, that is our show. You can follow us on Twitter and IG. We're at NPR Code Switch on both those platforms. You can email us at codeswitch@npr.org if email is more your thing. And subscribe to our newsletters at newsletters.npr.org/codeswitch. This episode was produced by Jess Kung and edited by Leah Donella. A shout out to the rest of the Code Switch Massive: Karen Grigsby Bates, Kamara Devarajan, Alyssa Jong Perry, Christina Kala, Steve Drummond, and Sam Yellowhorse Kessler. Our art director is LA Johnson. I'm Gene Demby. Be easy, yo.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Viore, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to viori.com/NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Last year, over 20,000 people joined the Body Electric study to change their sedentary, screen-filled lives. And guess what?
We saw amazing effects.
Now you can try NPR's Body Electric Challenge yourself. Listen to updated and new episodes wherever you get your podcasts.